It's a gorgeous day in South Central Alaska. The sun is shining, and although it's a little nippy, it's a perfect day to get out for a run. Boy, that's sure what I'd be doing if I didn't have a pulled calf muscle. Running is a really popular sport in Anchorage. I mean, look around any day. Runners are almost invisible because there's so many of them running on our trails and along the road. You don't notice them anymore. But boy, when we get together for the Heart Run or Mayor's Marathon or one of the many, many other events we have, you realize there are many, many thousands of runners in Anchorage, kind of the invisible sport. But there's actually a lot to talk about, and people are interested in getting involved can listen. And I know there are a lot of runners out there who may have questions and want to share thoughts about running. So that's our topic today, the joy of running on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth, and I've got two guests to start out for the first half hour. In the studio with me is Jason Hoffecker, who is has the Peak Performers Track Club. He's also coach at Anchorage Christian School and the president of USA Track and Field for Alaska, and a runner himself. Lots of credits. Thanks for being with us, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
And on the phone, he's actually in Washington, D.C., but he's an Anchorage guy, John Clark, manager at Skinny Raven Sports. Thanks for being with us, John.
No problem. Glad to be involved.
So, Jason, I found that people think you're a very virtuous person if you go out and run and, you know, keep fit and do all that stuff. But I always feel a little guilty when people are complimenting me for being a runner because it's actually so darn much fun and it feels so good. I mean, do you feel the same way about it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I don't always get compliments. Sometimes people just say I'm crazy. But,
yeah. On a cold winter day. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's just great to be able to go out and experience yourself and experience, you know, creation and just be out there running.
Yeah. And do you get this feeling at the end of sort of a little bit of a high or a little bit of a, what they call an endorphin rush when you sort of feel a little bit elated, you know, finish your run, you're tired, but you just have a nice sort of warm.
Right. Yeah. I always feel way better after the run than I did the five steps before it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to get started. Right.
But yeah. Once you're done, yeah, you definitely feel a whole lot better.
So what's your history as a runner? How did you originally get into it?
Well, my dad was a runner. He was a college runner. And so as I got older, I was like, hey, Dad, I want to start running. And so in junior high, I started running cross country and then got more involved in it and ran all through high school here in Anchorage and went off and ran in college. And then, you know, when college was over, ran 5 years there and then got into road running and, you know, just really enjoy the sport of running and all the aspects of it.
Uh-huh. And it really is a lifelong thing. You never really have to give it up.
Right.
Unless you injure yourself, right?
Give it up for a short period.
Yeah. So, John, and you are sort of in the running business. Skinny Raven Sports is kind of a specialty store, I guess, other kinds of sports, but it's really a runner store, isn't it?
That's correct. That's where we started.
Yeah. And what about you yourself? Do you get involved in races and regular running?
Oh, yeah, forever. I mean, I started running in high school through college, post-collegiate, and I've run probably 25 marathons over the last, 12, 15 years. So, yeah, I've been running for a long time.
Wow, 25 marathons.
I'm halfway to him. I've got 12.
When you run a marathon, are you... I've yet to do it. You know, I'm a little worried about hurting myself or something like that. And it takes a lot of time to train, doesn't it? You kind of have to work up to it. True, Jason?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, most of my training plans, I know, I'm sure John is the same thing. They're like 17-week training plans, and that's the bones of it. But if you haven't been running before that, you know, it's a continual process for the marathon because it is such a long race and so many things that you can mess up in that race.
Uh-huh. Yeah. John, how do you get ready for a marathon?
Well, I mean, you know, exactly the same as Jason. It takes a long time to prepare if you want to do it properly. And I think, like Jason, our goals are to try to do as well as we possibly can. There's a lot of other reasons people do it, you know, just for the challenge of completing the distance. So everybody has their challenges, and the marathon is definitely the event that challenges and inspires and draws a lot of people to that. I think it's that one thing we say, I've run a marathon, that actually means something to people more than saying I ran a 5K or a half marathon.
Yeah, definitely people are impressed, and for good reason, because, I mean, there's inevitably a lot of suffering involved in that 3 hours or however long it takes you, right? I mean, it's not like fun in terms of, like, Jason, I mean, you sort of have to gut your way through it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody always says, you know, the first half of the marathon is the first 20 miles. The second half is the last six. And, yeah, there have been numerous marathons where, yeah, those last ones have been more of, I'm going to finish this because that's what I set out to do.
You know, and, yeah.
Because you're in a lot of pain.
Yeah. So what are the so the best events you've done? I mean, we've got the Mayor's Marathon in Anchorage, and then there's the Equinox up in Fairbanks, which is a big hill climb. What are the sort of the favorite ones you've been involved in, Jason?
I always love doing Mayor's. Mayor's is a great race. Beautiful views, obviously here local, get to see all the people, and love doing Mayor's. But then I really enjoy Chicago, probably because it's flat. That's a big part of it. But And I just like that big city marathon and the whole expo and all the stuff around it. I really enjoy going.
Just massive, massive numbers of people.
Yeah, huh? I enjoy it. A lot of people don't enjoy that. I do.
And John, what are some of your favorite marathons you've done?
Well, I've done quite a few. I mean, I've run Chicago, New York, Boston, Los Angeles, even London. But I'd have to say New York City's my favorite. It's a pretty special event. And the stage in New York, it's a big stage to begin with. But the way New York supports the marathon and just the unique parts of New York City that you go through all the boroughs and the bridges and finish in Central Park. It's a pretty special event.
Yeah, that is great. Now, are you still looking for a personal best? I'd like to hear this from either of you guys when you're doing an event like that. Or as you age, are you still trying to just stay up sort of in a place in the pack for your age group? I mean, do you still look for improvement and still making a record, Jason? I mean,
yeah, I do. I definitely you know, I kind of, toward the point in life where when I train to do a marathon, I set my goal at my PR, and that's the pace I run at, and hopefully I've done the work to pull it
through. And would you be willing to share here for all the world?
Sure. My marathon PR is 2:41:55.
Wow.
Hoping to get in the 2:30s. I've been in the 2:40s like 8 times. I'd love to get down in the 2:30s like John and all those guys have. So
that's amazingly impressive, though. I mean, very, you know, what percentage you ever get under 3 hours? Maybe like 5 to 10% of runners ever make it under 3 hours. So, John, tell me about you. I mean, are you still pushing it? Still trying to make break your record? And
no, I know for sure those days are probably past. It's been about 12 years since I ran my PR for the marathon. But, I mean, actually, to be honest, some of the best marathons I've run have not been my fastest, for sure. So even when I ran my best time, it really wasn't my best race, per se. So I think each marathon's different. Each course provides different challenges. And even your training leading up to it is different. So you have to compare to those things. So I still am inspired to run my best marathon, but just may not be my fastest.
Well, now, to explain to us what that means, because a lot of people would think fastest means best.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have competed for a while would understand, but I think sometimes, you know, you might have been prepared to run even faster, which I felt like I was when I ran my best time. And there's been times when I thought I ran as fast as I possibly could for that race. And so, you know, that was, in my mind, a better race. And I think that's a better way to gauge how you performed against yourself rather than against a specific time. And especially it's a lot healthier too as you get older to focus on that aspect, because you're not going to run faster than I did 12 years ago when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of feeling at the end where you've used it all up, but you still feel good in a sense. You still feel like you haven't like ruined yourself, but you haven't left anything out on the course, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, you ran the best you felt that you were capable of for that day. And, you know, some days you're capable of not running as fast, but you're capable of running as well as you can for that day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a better way, whether you were sick that week or you had an injury or you just, you know, you're 12 years older than you were when you ran your fastest time. I'd rather hold myself to that standard, and I'll be more successful if I use that as a standard rather than you know, some time I ran 12 years or 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you mind sharing what your personal best was for the marathon?
I ran in Chicago. It was 2:34.
Wow. Yeah, that's very impressive. So, you know, for most of us, certainly like me, there's never any question of being at the front of the pack. It's more like competing with the people around you, competing with yourself, and finding enjoyment in that, you know, sort of the guys you're used to running with and being sort of equal with. And that becomes a whole different way of looking at it. It's still some competition, but it's not the competition you guys were doing when you're posting these super times. And I think that's true for most recreational runners, don't you, Jason?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, oh, we talk about that a lot. You know, they have age group awards. They have all kinds of different things to keep people motivated. But even if you're not in that realm of it, you still have your best. And were you satisfied with your race? I echo what John said. I remember, I think probably my second fastest marathon ever was like a 2:42 low, but I went through the half at 1:14, which was stupid because that would be 2:28. And I just remember the last 6 miles. I mean, even though I think it's my second fastest marathon ever, it was the worst marathon I ever ran. I mean, I was cramping. I just didn't run smart. And so a lot of the enjoyment comes in. Yeah, there's times. Yeah, there's awards, but do you feel satisfied with what you did?
So there's a physical aspect, there's a mental aspect, but then there's really a psychological aspect of knowing yourself, knowing your own abilities, and sort of staying within those abilities and doing your best on that level.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about running today. We've got a lot to talk about, and I know there are runners out there and people might want to be runners who would have questions. If you want to get on the air, the number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, we have a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. We will take those emails and read them on the air. So welcome you to get on the air with my guests, Jason Hoffecker of the Peak Performers Track Club and John Clark from Skinny Raven Sports. I wanted to talk a little bit about the changes in running as a sport. You know, you would think that, well, running is kind of a simple thing. You just put one foot in front of the other. But in fact, it's changed a lot over the years. And when I was in high school and doing a little bit of cross country, the idea was to land on your heel, roll over your foot, and then take off on your toe. And so there was a lot of technology put into shoes with a lot of cushioning under the heel. Now coaches are talking about landing on your toe, taking off from your toe, and this kind of goes to some African runners who are very successful who maybe didn't even have shoes, you know, and so they landed on their toes. I wanted to start with you, Jason, and find out how you're teaching running now and how it might have differed from the past, and then talk to John about some of the shoe technology that relates to that. So how do you teach, you know, is this landing on the heel and rolling over thing, is that a thing of the past?
You know, I deal with a lot of, I mean, John's going to have a whole lot more on this being in the shoe industry, but I deal with a lot of people that have, you know, been running for a while. And so a lot of ours is not so much correcting their running as it is getting them to enjoy what they're doing. But we do talk about a lot of, you know, not landing on your heels because you're taking all that energy out. And we don't necessarily teach running directly on your toes because that's more of a sprinter, but we kind of talk about, you know, that midfoot strike and how that's going to make you more effective and more efficient in your running. So we definitely have changed in that, and yeah, because we've definitely gone away from so much of that landing on your heel and taking all that impact through your leg. And even with the high schoolers that I work with, you know, at the school I work at, and we deal with that too with them as far as, hey, you can be much more effective, less injuries if you learn how to have your foot strike be a little bit better.
Is it primarily an injury avoidance thing, or is there also an improvement in the efficiency and the amount of energy you're putting into your stride?
Oh, well, there's definitely in both. I mean, improvement in efficiency is, yeah. I mean, you work on your form and you can make each step just a little bit more efficient. It's going to make you that much faster over whatever we're talking, 400 meters, 2 miles, 5K, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. But the technique would differ slightly for a sprinter or mid-distance runner as opposed to like a cross-country runner or long-distance runner?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, sprinters, we're coaching them, stay on your toes as much as possible.
Because for them, it's just pure, it's all about acceleration.
Yeah. And yeah, so definitely you have to look at each event, each thing they're doing, you know, and take that into account as you go through it.
John, how has this affected the shoe industry and the kind of the products that you're selling and how you advise people on what shoe to buy?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a stronger emphasis and attention to the whole, you know, when the barefoot, and especially Born to Run, came out. And so there were a lot of people immediately drawn towards that idea that, wow, this will make running easier and this will make me faster, this will make me less injury-free. And you know, that's a very hard thing to quantify, and especially now that it's more studies have come out and have indicated that, you know, that's not necessarily true, that you're not going to be less injury prone. There's a lot of things that need to be considered. Yes, people need to work on improving their form, improving their efficiency, because doing that will help, obviously, reduce the chance of injuries, but it's not going to eliminate it. It is running. And so if you are trying to run farther and faster, running on harder surfaces and pushing yourself, you're invariably going to run the risk of being injured. So can you do things to help minimize that, you know, in terms of how you take care of yourself, where you run, proper footwear, foot strike? There's so many variables that come into play. And, yes, if you can enhance certain aspects of that, you can reduce the chance of becoming injured. Getting back to footwear, yes, there was immediately that big move towards the barefoot shoes and shoes with no protection. But what was happening, a lot of people were getting injured because they were relying upon the footwear to teach them how to run rather than think about how they should run. And the pendulum has swung back slightly more towards slightly more traditional protection, but maybe with lower offset heights. In other words, different heel-toe ratios. Instead of being flat, maybe 4 millimeters or 8 millimeters instead of traditional 12-millimeter offset heights. So
that would be the heel is not as high as in an older shoe. Is that what you're saying?
Correct. So, like most of the traditional running shoes, which still exist and are still very successful, you know, even though there's been a slight change in some of the products available for people that want to focus on improving their foot strike and being maybe, and I don't necessarily think that people don't land on the heels. It's our goal would be to have maybe land less heavily on their heels, be a little more midfoot, but forefoot is definitely not the goal. That's definitely a recipe for getting injured for people who are trying to make too much of a transition, who have gone through, you know, thousands of miles of running and learned to run a certain way, and then you're trying to say, okay, let's throw away that shoe and let's give you this thing, and you're going to change drastically, and then we want you to change everything you've done, and you have muscles in your feet and your hips and your knees that have been adapted over years of running. So you need to be very careful about the changes you do make.
Did you see people doing that? Is it sort of hit as a fad to trying to make a sudden huge adjustment?
You mean a fad?
Yeah, in terms of like suddenly you're seeing these shoes where there's virtually, it's almost like a rubber sock, you know, there's very little there, and people... Were people like suddenly making a switch over and hurting themselves, or, you know, and so you say it's pulling back a bit?
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think it's just our human nature is even when we were carrying those products and selling the products, which we still do, we still had to wrap our arms around people and say, we need you to be very careful. We, you know, you need to go slowly. We want you to go a half mile, maybe a mile. We don't want you to go and do your traditional 4 miles, 5 miles, 10 miles in these products day after day. You will get hurt. And people still would, you know, run farther, and they'd come back and say, you know, hey, yes, you were right, or, you know, I didn't listen, I did get hurt. And some people have done very well with these products, but that is definitely not the norm. So some people are, you know, will swear by it. They'll say they've been happy, they've been injury-free since they've done it, but there's a lot of people who've come back to what they traditionally used. And I think it all depends on the individual, too. And I think that's what we do at Skinny Raven, is just focus on, you know, trying to provide the best product for your situation. We can answer the questions, and we can talk about how you need to apply these certain products to help you become a better runner, because obviously our best interest is keeping the runner healthy if we have injured runners and they're not wearing out shoes.
That's right.
I think the runners in our business, we have, you know, we both have the same common goal.
Right. Well, what other kinds of new products or things have happened? I mean, I got a pair of these great ice bug shoes that have like metal cleats on them, so you can run. I'm a cross-country skier. So, and when it gets icy in the winter, you kind of can't run. It's dangerous. But with these things, you can still do it. And I'm wondering what other kinds of new things are out there that people might not know about.
Well, I think for sure there's definitely been a change as the pendulum, like I mentioned, has swung back to a little more normal protection. Looking at shoes with, I said, the different offset heights right now, there's a lot of interest in the shoes that have some of the 4 millimeter drops. It just depends on that person, but we've seen, you know, a little bit of shift towards that, and that's kind of like in the middle now, where we have a little better ground where people can get the benefits, almost benefits, of being barefoot, but having some of the traditional protection that you need, because, you know, I mean, the reality is we our society's evolved a lot faster than we have as human beings. So, you know, concrete is a lot harder, and our feet aren't prepared to just run on concrete. So we need to protect ourselves against that. We also are trying to run, you know, marathon, 26 miles nonstop as fast as we can, or try to train as many miles in the week as much as we can. And we're not really built to do that. We're always pushing ourselves to do more. So we have to be careful and just find the right product. If you're running a few miles a week, then maybe a shoe that has minimal protection is fine, because you're not running enough to maybe hurt yourself. But if you're running a lot and training for a marathon, then you may need just the same old shoe that you've had that you had 10 years ago, because darn it worked really good then too.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that the modern running shoes, the upper part of the shoe may be very durable and may look like it hasn't worn out, but you wonder whether the cushioning on the sole of the shoe is still in place. How do you judge whether a shoe needs to be replaced?
I mean, a simple starting point would be somewhere like 400 to 500 miles for a good shoe that has some you know, reinforced technology to help the midsole last longer. The less expensive shoes wear out, you know, quite a bit faster. They're just simple blown rubber with some air in there, and so they'll compress pretty quickly. And it's not so much that there's not cushion, it's just how quickly the shoe bottoms out over time. And you get a compression set in the rubber after a certain amount of time where the rubber's not rebounding back to its initial cushioning protection. So it's bottoming out quicker, and so your joints and muscles are taking that shock on more than they did at first. And it's a gradual process, so it's hard for people to notice it. I always refer to it being like, you know, boiling a frog. You know, as you gradually turn up the heat, the frog will just stay in the water because it doesn't realize it's being boiled to death. And a runner will also not know that the shoe is not providing the protection anymore, because it's happened, you know, over, you know, hundreds of miles. But, you know, different weighted people, you know, someone weighs 200 pounds and someone weighs 120 pounds, then that 200-pound person is going to wear out the shoes in, you know, shorter time than the lighter person.
Mm-hmm. But might not even realize it, as you said, because they're not used to how springy a new shoe feels. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
So this is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. We're talking about running, as listeners could probably figure out by now. I've got two guests in this, on the air. In the studio with me is Jason Hoffecker, who is with the Peak Performers Track Club, also with Anchorage Christian School, also with USA Track and Field. And on the phone, John Clark with Skinny Raven Sports. And, you know, let's stay on this injury topic for a minute, because, oh, and let me give out the numbers in case there's questions from listeners, anything about running, basically. 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage, 550-8433, or from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And email works well. Good if you're at work, hometown@alaskapublic.org. Jason, you work with masters, which is a nice word for old people. What do you have to do? What do you do to avoid injuries? Because when you're older, you're much more likely to get injured. I have the sense, and it takes longer to get better. And some major running injuries can last a long time. What are sort of the things that you do to protect? Used to be that you were supposed to stretch for a long time before you even warmed up. Now they tell you, well, that was a waste of time.
Right. Well, we, you know, Peak Performers Track Club, we try to keep it really user-friendly. You know, we like to have all levels, all ages. If they want to come out, you know, we want them to be a part of it. But one of the things we talk about is consistency. Now, we meet once a week for our workouts, but I tell them if that's all you're doing for running is that one time a week, then your chances of injury are going to go up. And so we talk about consistency, you know, during the winter months, even getting out. A lot of my people, they ski a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. We have some that run at the Dome and things like that, but we have just getting out and being active, so then when we start up in April, your body's not going to go into shock of activity. So we do a lot talking about being consistent, getting out on your own, doing some running. And then at our stuff, we do, you know, warm up. We try to get everybody warm up 15 minutes on their own, and then we do foot drills, which
and,
is like
and warm up is like you're running at a low intensity level, just sort of jogging
right.
along,
yeah,
and just
jogging.
Getting the blood going to every part of your body.
Yeah, basically that's it, getting the blood flowing. And then right before the workout, we call them plyometrics. It's active warming up, a lot, you know, quicker things to get those muscles starting to fire. And then we go into our workout, and then we do a cool down at the end. That's one of the most important things, is the cool down. because that's where the stretching and the relaxing of the muscles is going to take place. So we spent a lot of time talking about consistency, and then at the workouts, you know, warming up, doing the little things that are going to help you stay injury free. And then if you are injured, make sure you communicate that, because, like, you know, most of us, pretty much all of us, aren't running for the Olympics here. Mm-hmm. We have to go to work tomorrow, you know, and so you don't want to hurt something worse at the workout, whatever, because you didn't, you know, tell the coach or let anybody know what was going on.
And would you agree, as soon as something feels bad, you stop immediately? You don't sort of like try to gut through it, because that's when you really, really hurt yourself.
Right. That's what I tell all my runners. I'm not saying I follow that, but that's what I tell them all. You need to stop and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the injuries that people get, shin splints, what is it called? Plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
Can you just quickly go over what some of those things are and you know, if there's any particular way to avoid them?
Shin splints, that's a common term we use for it. It's usually shin soreness. I mean, if you have full bone shin splints, you're not walking in the morning and stuff like that. But shin soreness, yeah, that muscle starts to hurt there in your shin. And I talk about icing. Some people like taping. You know, that's, you know, if you have the time.
Is it just
energy.
Basically inflammation where you've overused a muscle?
Usually, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can progress if you don't take care of it to where it becomes something that's very severe. And then you have to, you know, stop running completely. But usually with shin soreness, you can, as long as you're icing and stuff, you can take care of it. Plantar fasciitis, that's a tough one because that varies from person to person.
And that's where you've hurt the arch, basically?
Yeah, it's painful. Another one that we deal with a lot is, you know, your Achilles tendon, where that gets strained or whatever, and that can be very painful, too, where you have to sit out some time. And then the other big one I get is, obviously, as people progress and get older, you know, we deal with MCLs and ACLs and recovery from knee surgeries at the age of 50 compared to 20. That's a little bit different, and so we deal mm-hmm. a lot with, you know, bringing them back slowly and things like that. Sometimes it's a year before they really get back to where they were.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of people who have gotten to where they can't run anymore, right? I mean, the joint issues are such that they have to switch over to biking and not run anymore. And there's not that many old runners, really. I mean,
getting fewer.
You get fewer and fewer. So, I mean, you just kind of hope that you can be healthy and keep going for a long time. Do you have some older people in your group?
Oh, yeah, we have age, like I said, our age range goes from 20s up to 70-year-olds, and they are usually, you know, the more consistent ones are the ones that are between 40 and 70. They're the ones that are there every week doing the work and having the fun and, you know, camaraderie and getting together. You know, they do the Klondike relay mm-hmm. and things like that, and so we try to encourage a lot of that.
Yeah, well, that's really a big part of it is that social aspect where you're hanging out with a group of people and working out with them and sort of sharing. And frankly, there's nobody else who's interested in your workout other than people you go with, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's the best way to bore people in the world is start telling them about your workout.
Exactly, yeah.
John, before we lose you, I wanted to talk a bit about Skinny Raven and the timing technology and the events that you guys sponsor and are part of. You have a part of your business which is doing timing for races, and it's kind of amazing what the technology is able to do now, where you have a chip that's attached to a bib that you wear, and then there's somehow or other the start line and finish line sense your location, right?
That's correct. It's an RFID chip, so I think a lot of people may be familiar with RFID technology. It's being used in a lot of aspects, whether it's in the shipping industry or inventory control for larger companies. And this is just one application of it, where we adhere the RFID chip that goes on the back of the race bib, and then we have mats that will take the readings and record the time of the person.
And so when you're starting, the time will start in the computer when you cross the starting line, because some of our bigger races, it takes a little while to get to the starting line. And then at the finish line, it'll instantaneously get your time and the overall results are available really quickly. What's the quickest you can actually share the results?
Well, within seconds, of course, with that technology. It's just the platform on which you do the timing and how that's applied in terms of having instantaneous results, having results on computers that people can access at the site, the registration process, the bib handout process. There's all these different aspects that are tied into some of these timing platforms now that make it so much easier for the participants, helps the speed of the timing of the event. It also helps race directors now as we start timing events throughout Anchorage being able to have people enter their information and have that instead of having people write it on paper forms and have to input that into another database and so on has become much easier and more accurate for people to get results. So there's a whole menu of things that you can do in terms of social media, text messaging, things like that that are now built into these programs. They're very, very robust.
So basically, there's no paperwork and there's very little error. You know, it's unless somebody wears the wrong bib or something.
There's humans involved at every end of the spectrum. So as long as there's humans involved, there'll always be errors. But the errors are definitely minimal. So a person could break their chip while they're running. You know, they're supposed to not bend it, but again, there's humans involved, so someone could sit on it and potentially break it. That's why we have two chips. But so it's the percentage is over 99%. But when you have, you know, a few thousand runners, then you're going to have potentially a few people that that you may miss their time. But then you also have backup technology and things like that to catch those type of things and make those corrections. And I think that's where the strength of a timer comes into play, is your ability to deal with the variables or the potential misreads or things like that that happen for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a really interesting article in the New Yorker magazine recently about a guy who was trying to run a marathon in every state, and it turned out that he was cheating. He was cutting the courses, and he even had gone to the trouble of, in one state, inventing a marathon that never really took place and inventing a website for it. And I was wondering if there's a way that this technology can prevent that kind of thing by having, you know, timing people at splits, or is that something we don't really worry about too much in Anchorage?
We do have mats at certain locations on courses that we could call, you know, they are called cheater mats, but they're also, you know, this person was circumventing the system in large events with multiple timing mats where he would cross one mat and then, you know, get a ride to the next place wherever there was.
His ingenuity was incredible.
Right, right. And so, you know, if there's a person that wants that badly to do that, then it's, we're going to be more focused on the 99.99% people that are going to do it correctly and not spend a lot of effort trying to hunt down, suspect people that want to do things like that.
But, right, because it's really for fun.
Technology does a lot better job with that. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, for the great majority of us, any competition there is just fun competition. So is this technology one reason why we have so many events going on? It seems like through the summer and into the fall, there's an event almost every weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, now that we've evolved a timing company with Skinny Raven, I mean, for example, we have a Halloween race on Saturday as part of the trick-or-treat straight on 4th Avenue, so we'll be doing a 4K costume race on 4th Avenue, which is an event that hasn't traditionally existed, but now that we have the technology, we can more readily put on these events with the ease of timing and stuff, that makes it easier for us to do events. So, and also I think people are looking for more events. More people are coming to the sport. They're looking for more interesting, better events. Having better timing system takes a huge burden off the race directors. Obviously, on our end, we race direct our own events, and we're going to grow more. Jason, we timed an event for Jason. I think, you know, you can ask him what the difference was for his event when we got involved this past year for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the technology is incredible. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, John. John Clark from Skinny Raven Sports, and there's a link to their website. And do you have your events all up there if people want to find out about them, John, on your website?
Right. So, yes, you know, skinnyraven.com, and the Fighting 4K is this Saturday beginning at 11 o'clock on 4th Avenue. And we do have a bib registration and bib pickup at Skinny Raven tomorrow from 4:30 to 7.
All right. Well, thanks very much for being with us, John. I do appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. And I just mentioned that the website, alaskapublic.org, there is a page for our show today and links to a lot of the stuff we're talking about. We're going to take a break and be back with another guest and also continue with Jason Hoffacker here in the studio. And I'll be giving out the phone numbers for you if you have any questions about running or comments about our topic today. Stick with us. It's Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Back. I'm Charles Wolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska, and our topic today is running in Anchorage. We've been talking about injuries, we've been talking about races and timing and all kinds of stuff. There's a lot more to talk about, and we welcome your calls if you want to get on the air. The phone number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. My guest in the studio is Jason Hoffecker, who is a coach with Peak Performers Track Club, also with Anchorage Christian School. And now I'd like to welcome John Rada, who's the Director of Parks and Recreation for the Municipality of Anchorage. And John's joining us by phone. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Charles.
It seems to me that you're in the business of recreation, and if you're out on the bike trails, we call them bike trails, but they're just as much running trails as they are bike trails. Running is a huge part of our recreational activity in Anchorage.
Well, it is. It's an amazing amount of people who recreate. I think maybe that's why we live in the north, and it's the environment that we're in, and it's the scenery, it's the surroundings, it's everything that we have to offer. But there's so many people that are out on a constant basis, whether you are walking or running or riding a bike. The municipality has about 220 miles of trails.
Amazing.
I don't think people realize the expanse that really we cover. Needless to say, you can imagine how many people are out on the trails all winter, all summer, fringe seasons, everything. So, yeah, we have an active community. I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, it's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, and you also put on some events, the Mayor's Marathon maybe being the premier event, but then also the Tuesday night races in the fall. And is that all a part of your staff work that takes place in putting on these events? And I would think the Mayor's Marathon might be one of the bigger events in Alaska, yes?
Well, it is, and it's not all staff. I mean, honestly, and I know listening to some of the comments on there, listening to John speak and things like that, everything is done in collaboration. You can't pull these things off. Not one single person or a single entity. It takes sponsors. It takes volunteers. It takes organizations, service organizations, step up. Whether it's Red Cross, Rotary. I mean, there's all kinds of people to get active, and but our staff works directly with different groups. We work with Skinny Raven, for example. They're one of the sponsors for the Tuesday Night Race Series. Along with Hyundai and the Children's Hospital at Providence, and you take a look at the event schedule, and you have 9 races with over 1,000 people. Every Tuesday night, all the way until November 6th, at multiple locations all across the city, from Kincaid to Service to East to Bartlett, and they're fun. That's what they are. It's fun for people to get out. It's a social event. It's an active event. We've got everything from the Farm League on up. So that's a big deal. But the big one is Mayor's Marathon. You're absolutely correct. And that's a huge effort. We work with UAA. We have a partnership with them. Conoco's a prime sponsor of that. This year, participation in the Mayor's Marathon was over 4,000 in all the events combined. And that includes the marathon per se, which is the full event. And there was almost 1,100 runners in that. In the half marathon, there was 2,100. And the 5 mile, almost 700, and then we have a relay component as well, which is kind of a composition of others. There were 50 teams entered, so
wow.
All in all, the numbers are like 4,200 and something, 4,220 or 25. So,
and that's just the competitors, yeah.
Yeah, And that's, I mean, look what it's like at the race start. I mean, everybody's got a friend or a family member, or the, you know, the teams that come up here from outside Alaska bring a huge support network. And it takes a lot of work. I mean, it's a massive endeavor. And, you know, we assigned a staff person 3 years ago to start working more cooperatively and collaboratively with UAA, kind of pinned down. You know, we've had some budget challenges, and so we looked at how we do business together, and it's been very successful. And, you know, now we're over the 4,000 participant mark, and, I mean, that's a sign of a healthy event.
Do those entry fees pretty much cover the costs?
They do, yeah. I mean, you couldn't do it if you had to pay for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be cost prohibitive. I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, areas of the country where race registration fees are higher, depending on the area and things like that. But we've kept it manageable. I think UAA's done a great job of working along those lines. They have a huge support network. We provide staff facilities cooperatively. We do it together. And ultimately, the costs do get covered. And in fact, I think UAA, as a fundraiser for them, which is great for their running program. I mean, that's why you mm-hmm. do these things.
Yeah. I wanted to let people know that the Tuesday night races are still going on. So there's a event on the 30th, which would be next Tuesday, the Kincaid Park Costume Run, mm-hmm. Where people are welcome and invited to wear their Halloween costumes. Then on the 6th is the finale. We may have snow on the ground by then, also at Kincaid. And those runs are especially fun because they're very informal and timing is relaxed, and folks are just basically running through the woods. It's a huge social event. Tons of people out there, and the Muni's able to produce it. I guess it probably doesn't cost you a lot of money, but it takes you some staff time, and it's one of those things that you do just to have programs so people get out at night, eh?
Well, and that's just it. It is fun. I mean, Tuesday Night Race Series is. There's what we call the Lightning League. You know, those are competitive runners. They're people that are out there. I mean, they do this. I mean, that's their sport. But beyond that, we call them the Farm League. I mean, that's for me. I'd be a Farm League person. I'm not a competitive runner anymore. But if I want to run, I can go out and enjoy myself in the woods with a bunch of people or family or whatever. And that's what it is. It's about fun. It's enjoyment. It's recreational. It's healthy. Gets people outdoors, and that's what it's all about. And you see a lot of families that come out and at those age groups, they'll run with their kids or something like that. Or they'll just bring the kids and get them introduced into, you know, a good, healthy sport of running, and that's the Munchkin League. That's the little ones,
right.
You know. But
and they're probably the most competitive ones at all from what I've seen.
Oh, it gets crazy.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, but it is. It's fun, and it's a great opportunity to get outdoors and get out and do something that's healthy, recreational, it's family-oriented, brings a lot of people together, and you know, it keeps us as an active community. It's a great, you know, it's a great way to just go out and have fun.
Yeah. Let me ask you a little bit about trail maintenance, especially as winter's coming on. There are certain trails that are actually scraped, and there are other trails that are more groomed and snow-packed. And how is the decision made on which trails to maintain when and what the priority is? And also, how can people find out information about trails?
Well, you can go to the you know, the municipal website, go to Parks and Recreation. I mean, we have a link right there, and you can get on and you can see the trails, and you'll get updates on conditions. We always do winter postings. It'll tell you where the trails are done, whether they're multi-use or those that are left, you know, for skiing. There are areas that, of course, have to be kept open. A good example is anything that's a thoroughfare, if you will, a connection from a trail to a school, mm-hmm. you know, a walkway. Sometimes people want them left snowpacked, so, I mean, they can ride their bike to work or kids can walk to school. But, you know, each area has its own little initiative, if you will. what works best for the most people, what is a corridor, a connective corridor. More and more people ride their bikes in the winter now. We've seen, you know, that surge over time. But you don't want them where we've groomed the trails either. So there's a balance, I guess, is kind of what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's a lot of multi-use trails where you're packing the snow, but runners and bikers could still use them, even though they're sort of also for skiers. So I guess people just need to get along. One last question for you, John, unless there's something you want to add. I've noticed that a lot of runners run along the side of the bike trail on that little dirt path. Is that intentionally left there so for runners to be able to get off the pavement? Or is that just something that sort of informally happened over the years?
Well, a good construction platform is what's important. Typically, and you could take a look at a road that, let's say, doesn't have curb and gutter and sidewalks or something. You look at that platform, you need to have a shoulder that supports the actual paved surface. And in most places, you'll see a minimum of a foot and most of the time 2 feet on both sides of the trail. So you have a good hard pathway. People like to run on that. A lot of runners don't like that. You know, they like to run on the dirt. You know, it's less impactful on the knees, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But a good construction standard is to have the platform for the hard surface supported with both shoulders being in place so you don't have, good example this summer, look at the erosion that we had in so many different places.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want it eroding, and then you lose the hard surface, and it costs you a lot of money to maintain it. You got to go back and repair it, et cetera.
I got you. So that's a good dividend that we get. Well, thanks very much for being with us. John Rada, Director of Parks and Recreation for Municipality of Anchorage. I do appreciate your time.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. And it's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Jason Hoffecker, a running coach with Peak Performers Track Club, is in the studio. And now I'd like to go to Chris, who's calling in with a question. Chris?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
I'm here.
Yeah, go right ahead with your question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I don't think of myself as a runner yet, probably because I haven't managed to do a sub-4 marathon. I know my friends probably think I am a runner. I've done about 4 marathons so far, and this year I've done a grand experiment transitioning to the toe shoes, the five-finger shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually managed to do a half marathon, and I did the big wildlife run in the toe shoes and posted better times than I had before. So that's always been fun. But now I have an interesting challenge. It's getting cold out.
Yeah, you'll freeze your feet off.
Yeah. And I find anything like, by the time we hit around 32 degrees, more than 3 miles, my feet are quite numb. Is there any solution for this other than running in the dome for the winter?
Jason, what do you, I mean, it is, biking is even colder in the winter. You really have to wrap up.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't run in those shoes, the minimalist shoes, just because I've never run in them. But they do make, just like they have the hand warmers, they make ones that you can stick in the bottom of your shoe that might help. I know when I've run in the wintertime, it's got really cold. I've resorted to taping those hand warmers to my knees and to my elbows just to keep the joints warm as I'm running because 25 below is cold. So, mm-hmm. So you might try that. But you're right. I mean, there's not a whole lot to them as far as warmth goes. So if you can't find something to keep them warm, they're going to be cold.
Yeah, and that's even true of just a regular running shoe. You can get chilly, and it's just, there's also additional risk of pulled muscles, and there's sort of more, you got to think a little bit more when you're running in cold weather. Any tips you can give Jason about not hurting yourself? And I've also heard that you should be careful about, breathing that very cold air when you're
right.
exercising.
Yeah, when it gets below 10 degrees, I wear a running face mask, and not the gator one, just a regular. Again, I pick mine up at Skinny Ravens, as a matter of fact, just to covers my mouth so that when I'm breathing, it's warm air coming in. And then, I use those hand warmers a lot. I layer, I wear shorts and tights if I have to, and then running pants, and then a couple shirts plus my running jacket, hat, gloves. Layering's important. And then, knowing your ability. You're not going to go out, if you haven't been running, you're not going to go out in 25 below and put in 10 miles. It's just not smart.
Mm-hmm.
So, you definitely have to take care of yourself because Alaska is Alaska and you got to be ready for it.
Longer warm-up period on a cold day?
Sometimes. I mean, the difficulty is where you're going to do it, run around your living room.
Right.
I try to really layer up. I do some light stretching. I might run for a mile and then stop and stretch a little bit and then keep going.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a concern, and it's hard to sometimes find the avenue to take care of that. Treadmill might help you warm up.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Chris?
Yeah, with the face mask idea, what temperature do you start wearing things like face masks to keep your lungs from getting toasted? And not just the lungs, I guess, but you know, also the roof of your mouth and your nose.
I wear hats and gloves now. You know, it's cold enough now to wear a hat and gloves. But usually if it gets below 10 degrees, that's when I start wearing a face mask. Maybe 15 to 10 degrees, I start wearing a face mask just because now you're really starting to suck in that cold air.
I know the competitive Nordic skiers will cancel races before -5, or junior Nordic will quit -5. If you go to Fairbanks, people have a whole different definition of cold, though. They'll keep going really cold. Right, great. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for calling. We're going to go to another call now from Caroline.
Yes, hi, Charles. It's good that you just now mentioned Fairbanks. Years ago when I lived up there, I wanted to mention someone that was one. She was, I think, her last day at 69, the one and only time I ran the Equinox Marathon. Marcy Trent took that race. She came in second in the field, being bested by a girl of 19 years. And I trained a little bit on the mountain, which I would say train a lot if you're planning to run even something as slow grade as or as minimal a grade as Esther Dome was. But I'd been running about a year or so, and I had some pretty good times, although that's not the reason I was running. I just, you know, I'd hit 30, and I decided I better get myself into some shape. But John Trent came up behind me on the trail, and he was yodeling. And I was having the hardest time getting up that that slight incline. So anyway, no, it to give credit to some of the old runners, that old in terms of history that we all remember, I wanted to mention her. And one other thing, the gentleman was asking about the cold. Yes, we had severe cold, and you always, I don't think they had the face things then, but you just wrapped a scarf around your face. You made sure that you were breathing through maybe two or three layers of scarf around your face and nose before you let that air into your lungs. But I didn't. They had the gymnasium, so I used to run the halls of the gym like a lot of people did, and then they had the Beluga, which was, you know, easy running. But
good point, Caroline. And I remember Marcy Trent well. She was and that whole family was a great family in this town. And she was tragically killed by a bear running down south of Anchorage. And I also call out Tim Middleton, who is a great. And is still around, still running, still skiing, but also just a terrific father of the sport in Anchorage. And there are a number of other families along those lines who have kept it going. So good point. Thanks for bringing that up.
I think one other crazy runner that we had up there, I'll never forget this guy. He was the head of the ROTC, and he lived on base. And he would run. That was his exercise from Fort Wainwright to Fairbanks, which was a good 7 to 8 miles at least. Every day, even in the coldest cold. And he was so thin that he had to wear weights in order to get a thorough workout. We had some amazingly tough runners up there.
Yeah.
I wasn't one of them.
That's very true. Yeah, there's some incredible stories. That race that takes place, the Iditarod Invitational, where we've had people run all the way to Nome. Unbelievable. Here's an email from Nate. I'm writing about the wonderful benefits of running in a therapeutic setting. Not only is it great mental health, but there's also a new program of runners at Highland Mountain Correctional Center. Inmates have made great progress through this. And, I know it keeps my mood up, you know, and it also creates a sense of accomplishment among a group of people. I guess you probably see that working with kids, Jason.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, you know, kids finish a day of school, they're kind of bummed out from whatever or just tired, and to get them out running, and you just see their spirits lift up. And same thing with our track club. You said Tim Middleton, he's in the Peak Performers Track Club.
Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, just to see those guys come around, and it is great. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I think, people will curse you as you come in looking all perky and red-cheeked, and they're feeling down, but you've actually done the work and feel good. So you mentioned the Dome, and I was actually hoping to get somebody from the Dome to come on because you can pay. The Dome is obviously that big inflated facility over at Minnesota and Raspberry Road, and you can actually pay a daily fee to go in and run there. Is that used a lot by the different track clubs and masters groups?
I believe it is. Yeah, I don't use it much, but I know ARC has, if you join Anchorage Running Club, Wednesdays are free. You can go in and run at a certain time, but you can go in and run for free. But then the Dome has memberships and all that kind of stuff too, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things that I guess when you're, do you do most of your work on the track then, or do you, in terms of when your peak performers club is working out sort of outdoor track?
Yeah, we work out at, well, the first couple we stay over at APU and run just because nothing's cleared yet. But then once we get a track, we go to West High Track Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. and yeah, we work out from 6 to 7.
How do people join one of these clubs? How do you find out about them?
We try to get our name out there, but basically you just show up. And so we have our secretary, Kim Baldwin, is there, and she'll get you hooked into our emails. And we let everybody come and try it out for a couple weeks, and then, you know, they join up, pay the – we have a minimal fee. I think it's $65 for the summer, and, you know, we just get out and have a good time. And one of the big things we do with Peak Performers is we're the sponsor club for the Alaska 10K Classic, which is a fundraiser for Special Olympics Alaska, and that's always that first Saturday in August. And, you know, they were mentioned earlier about how the system, you got to have people helping you, and it's so true. I mean, we have Skinny Raven Sports and Alaska Serographics are our presenting sponsors and do a lot of work for us, but without all the volunteers and all the other, you know, sponsors are just, you know, giving us things to give away or helping us out in different ways. We have so many of them. You can go onto our website, 10kclassic.com, and you just see all them, and it's community coming together to help out, and it's a great cause, yeah, and all that stuff.
The Special Olympics gets the proceeds, basically.
Correct. Yeah, everybody's a volunteer. Beyond the cost of the race, everything goes to Special Olympics Alaska.
That's great. There's a lot of, and we'll put this one on our website, alaskapublic.org, after the show, but Anchorage Running Club is a good source of information, and they have a lot of links as well to find out more. When you are working out with your club, are you... what are some techniques to get people to be better runners? I mean, are you running them through intervals? Are you teaching them about pace and technique? Or
exactly.
How do you go about doing it?
That's exactly what we do. Our main goal is we do interval workouts, and it's pacing. It's about, you know, it's not running your first 400 and 120 and the next one's in 2 minutes. It's about running a consistent pace throughout, and the people that stick with
that. And that's something
that
you have to learn.
Yeah, you have to learn it because your initial, you know, you figure, oh, I got eight of these, I'll run the first two really hard and then just survive the next six. Well, that's, you can run doing that, but it's not as fun as it is finding a consistent pace. And we really work on the intervals, shorter distances, 800s, 1600s, 1200s, 400s, to build them up to get that speed to help them on the consistency on their 5Ks, 10Ks.
And that's what it takes, really. I mean, running just sort of casually on your own, you'll make some progress, but when you work out with a club and go through a program, you really do improve quickly.
And that's what we say. We say anybody can go do these workouts on their own, but they don't until somebody tells them to. So,
yeah, you got to have the coach cracking the whip.
Right, right.
I'm sure that's true with the teenagers you work with as well.
Definitely.
All right. Well, this has been really interesting for me. I've enjoyed it very much. My guest has been Coach Jason Hoffecker from Peak Performers Track Club, also Anchorage Christian Schools, and all his other community involvements. Thanks very much for being with me, Jason.
Oh, no problem.
I enjoyed it. Yep. Earlier, we heard from John Clark of Skinny Raven Sports and John Rotta, the Director of Parks and Recreation with the municipality. Next week on Hometown Alaska, you will have host Kathleen McCoy talking about scary stories for Halloween, some storytellers in the studio, so that should be fun. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. I've enjoyed seeing the likes going up in number while we've been talking, so we know you're out there. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.